solar, sustainability,
renewable energy,
organics,
power, green
composting,
energy
solar,
human
transportation,
green leaders,
organics,
climate
change, composting,
fair human health,
water,
environmental
transportation.
This is Shades of Green.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Shades of Green, Austin's live green talk radio show. We're going to be talking with Jenny Nazak. Jenny is the author of Deep Green, Minimize Your Footprint, Maximize Your Time, Wealth, and Happiness. And Jenny Nazak, as some of you may be familiar with the name, is a former activist of Austin, moved to Florida, but also one of the founders of Shades of Green. Do we have Jenny on the line here?
I'm here. Hi.
Hey, Jenny.
Hey, Jenny.
Hey.
All right.
Hi, everybody. Thank
Welcome.
You so
yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. I like your show. I hadn't been following Code Next that closely. I didn't know it was that contentious on it.
Yeah, it's been a complicated one.
That's an understatement, yeah. We had a show on it. Actually, we did, I think, two shows on it at least. And yeah, it's dense. And all throughout the show, we had to define some of the terms that we were kicking around. So yeah, we need your input on it, Jenny.
Important, actually, because there's a lot of things baked into our culture, which includes baked into zoning and codes, that actually impede people from living a green lifestyle. There's actually lots of people who really want to live a green lifestyle, but they're actually impeded by zoning and codes in some cases.
Yes, that is a total fact, and that's, I guess, some of the things that we were trying to pull away in that Code Next, of trying to, you know, take some of the burdens away and try to direct a green development plan. So, yeah. Well, Jenny, tell us a little bit about what you've been doing and then what inspired you to write this, what looks like an awesome book.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, this is a book that's been a long time in coming. I was kind of a naturally raised environmentalist. Our parents, we moved around a lot growing up in a military family, and parents took us to the national parks and state parks, and the message was overwhelmingly, this is a delicate environment and we have to take care of it. And that was in the 60s and 70s that I was learning this. And as you all know, the first Earth Day, 1970, well, that was hit me at the formative age of 8. So it was inevitable. And then, but as I got, you know, when I moved to Austin in my 30s, I got really active in opposing developments. But I started to notice that it was all about this opposition, and it would be environmentalists on one side of the table, anti-development, and then developers on the other side of the table, seemingly anti-environmentalists. Mm. And it seemed so sad and so counterproductive, and hardly anything seemed to get done as far as environmental progress. And I started to think, well, there has to be a better way. It has to be not opposition. Well, I stumbled onto permaculture, the permaculture design movement, which is, as you all know, big and hot in Austin. There's a lot of deep expertise there with Austin Permaculture Guild.
And a lot. We lost a lot when we lost you, the permaculture.
Well, that's a huge compliment, but honestly, the fellows,
yes,
the,
I knew.
The people I learned from in Austin had been learning it for decades before.
Yeah,
me, so
yes.
I felt like I was able to add, you know, as a publicist, I was able to add a big megaphone to the permaculture movement in Austin. I'm grateful to have been able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of transplant a seed. I was just kind of called. I felt called to Florida. I felt called to a new terrain. Mm-hmm. Permaculture is really, really big in Florida, but not in Daytona Beach where I'm at. We're kind of a little outpost. But to get back to this whole environmental thing, I was the typical environmentalist who was really trying to cut her footprint, but I never felt like I was doing enough. And I would see environmentalists around me who were the kind of environmentalists that protest and they don't want, you know, developments over the aquifer and they want, you know, clean energy and all that, but their lifestyle didn't seem conducive to telling the company, you know, really conveying to the companies, like, this is what we want, because their lifestyle was still demanding all this stuff. You know, if, for example, if you're driving everywhere, why would a company think that it would be a great market to do bicycle infrastructure, or, you know, what have you, or Why would a city think, well, it's more viable to do a rail? No, people want their cars. So I mean, it was a conundrum for me. How do I help environmentalists be more environmental, like have a lifestyle that's more environmental. And I realized that environmentalists were just human and that they had the same obstacles that other people have to anything. Like, for example, if your child's school is miles away from your house and your house is miles away from your work, it's almost impossible to not have a car. Mm-hmm. And that's just one example.
Yep.
And another stumbling block I saw was that people would see a visible example of a green lifestyle, like they would see a person riding a bicycle. And if that person wasn't particularly able to ride a bike or it didn't fit their lifestyle, they would be chiding themselves. Oh, I should be doing that, but I'm not. Or like me, I have a brown thumb. I'm terrible at gardening. I'm terrible at it. I'm really persistent, but I'm bad at it. But I managed to grow some stuff. But when I would see somebody growing most or all of their food, I would just think, oh, I'm just terrible. I should do more. And so it was really counterproductive, and so I started to notice that. Well, in the mid-2000s, in the blogosphere, I stumbled on this group of people who were reducing their footprint to 10% of the U.S. average voluntarily on a permanent, ongoing basis. Mm. It was this grassroots movement that started in the blogosphere, and they had broken the categories of human needs and human consumption, broken it down into like seven categories, such as transportation, electricity, food. So in other words, there are multiple categories, multiple opportunities to reduce one's footprint, and they had figured out metrics for it. So me, I just never knew when to stop trying to cut my footprint. And when I saw the metrics, I was like, oh, these I can aim for, these I can do. Mm. So it addressed one problem. And then by having multiple categories, it addressed another problem, you know, because I'm really good at cutting electricity. I'm not so great with my food footprint right now.
So are these categories any part of the framework in the book and how you lay out for minimizing?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes. In the book, I outline this movement that I stumbled on. The movement calls itself the Riot for Austerity. And that name, Riot for Austerity, and also the alternative titles, 90% Reduction Challenge. And it took the Riot for Austerity actually comes from a book by a journalist and climate activist named George Monbiot, Monbiot, he wrote a book called Heat, How to Stop the Planet Burning. And he set forth a lot of policy recommendations and recommendations for what corporations should do. And they're all very sensible recommendations. And Ben, and what the core recommendation of his book was, in order to arrest climate change and stave off eco disaster, we have to cut our footprint by 90% of the U.S. average.
Wow.
The U.S. average.
That's a lot.
So much of the world is living at way, way, way under the U.S. average already.
Probably closer to the 10%.
And then also in America, there's many people who are living a low footprint. For example, they live in compact dwellings in cities and they don't drive much. So there's a lot of people who have a low footprint, at least in some categories, without realizing it. Mm. So by providing metrics, I actually, you know, I found that it gave me hope. And I felt like I wanted to publicize this movement more and combine it with a bunch of other tools I'd stumbled on, such as permaculture and bioregionalism, for giving people frameworks to use. Because I saw among my fellow environmentalists a lot of burnout and just hopelessness. Like, what's the use? Why should we do anything when it's just a drop in the bucket? Or how can I make a difference? Or I've already sacrificed enough. I can't do more.
Yeah.
And another key component of my book is it's make it personal. Like a person making some sort of a change, a lifestyle change, for the planet, it also needs to have a personal benefit. So the big ones are saving money and freeing up time and freeing up attention, like just freeing up headspace.
Well,
those are the biggies.
Yeah, well, that sounds really incredibly practical to me. And it's, I guess, something I've also struggled with, and I guess a lot of people struggle with, not even just environmental issues, but the guilt feeling, or that I'm not doing quite enough for the earth or the world.
Yes.
And it can drive people crazy and, in fact, like you say, weigh them down. So I really am glad, and it sounds like, are these... sort of steps that you're talking about to lower your footprint, are they kind of prescriptive where, like you say, I live in an area where I can't reduce my driving, but I can do other things so that you can get your footprint down. So is it kind of like in your book, do you list out and present each one of those sort of possible steps?
Yeah, it's kind of like a menu. Mm. More than, for example, not so much sequential steps, but kind of like a menu or things. Like, for example, and I also address, you know, in life we have temporary circumstances. Like if we're caring for an aging parent and we need to move to their house and their house is out in the country and the only transport is a car, you're not supposed to beat yourself up over that. You're not like an eco-sinner because you're taking care of your family member. Or, you know, if you're sick and you've got allergies and you're trying to figure out how to have a viable air system in your house, you're not a terrible person for using air conditioning or whatever, or some electrical appliance that cleans the air. It's not like you're an eco sinner or something.
that's a new term I haven't heard before. Eco sinner. That's great.
I kind of said it in the moment, but yeah. I feel that so much. Like people aren't letting themselves just acknowledge, hey, I've got personal needs. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
If people are going to deny their needs, well, guess what? It's going to be like deprivation on a diet where you feel deprived and then you just binge.
And then you go eat a bowl of queso.
Right,
you eat a bowl of queso.
And your guilt throws in.
Exactly. And it's terrible. So people, actually, I started to notice a lot of people made the mistake of thinking that I was virtuous. That's a big part of what motivated me to write the book, because all these people are like, oh, you're so good. I'm like, I'm not virtuous. I gained a lot of weight. I don't want to keep the weight on, and I don't want to pay for a gym. So it makes more sense to walk and ride a bicycle.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't want to spend $300 a month air conditioning my house. I'd rather spend that money on books or travel. Things like that. It's not virtuous. It's kind of selfish. Like, I don't want to spend a bunch of money on a car. You know, I have other things I want to spend that money on. You know?
So hence what your comment was before, that there has to be sort of some personal reward or goal in it.
Yes.
You know, not just
personal reward. Yes. Yeah. Well, like time. You know, and a lot of people, for example, Americans love their lawns. People just love their lawns. And in my part of Florida, we've gotten really obsessive about it. I live at the beach. And you think, come on, you guys, we're at the beach. You didn't move here to do, like, lawn care for every day of your life. We're at the beach. But people are really obsessed with weed whacking and edging. The noise is hideous.
Oh, that's the worst.
It's horrible. Yeah.
They have to have their green rectangle.
And it's so ungreen, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I know that people are emotionally attached to that. So the way that I try to, you know, offer a different viewpoint to others is just to say, well, if you want to spend less time on your yard and more time fishing, or would you like to not have to worry about watering your yard so much? Would you like to just have a yard that waters itself from the available rain? Things like that.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, that's Jenny Nazak, and she is a former Shades of Green host, but she's just published a book called Deep Green, Minimize Your Footprint, Maximize Your Time, Wealth, and Happiness. So, Jenny, tell our listeners, if you would, how they can find out about this book and find out about you.
Well, I have a public page on Facebook that is, people can always check out. My posts tend to reflect greenness. And I've also recently set up a dedicated website with a blog. So that is www.jennynazak.com.
Okay.
And that website, it's got the beginning sprouts of a blog. And I'm going to be just trying to boil things down. There's so much information out there. There's a sea of information. So in addition to having an image of my book up on the website and people can click and find out about the book and how to get it, and there's also just beginnings of some blog posts.
And eco-sinners are welcome.
Eco-sinners are more than welcome. Like, because everybody is an eco-sinner. I have my own eco-guilt.
Testify.
People, you know, they see me riding a bicycle, so that equates in their minds to all these other behaviors.
Yeah, that you're a better person than them, right?
Yeah, people make assumptions about every aspect of your life being somehow meticulously part of that image.
Oh, my God. And it's unproductive. And they see you eating an ice cream cone. Mm. And they're like, what? You eat ice cream? I said, yeah.
You've let me down.
I'm not a masochist. Yeah. But yeah, they just feel, I don't know what. But it's not going to work. And the way that your show is, the title of the show, Shades of Green, is so perfect because... Mm. It's not an either or. It's not like I'm green. Oh, I'm not.
No. Yeah, well, that's a reminder. Tell us how you came up with that. You and Ken came up with that you tell the story, how you came up with the name.
I can't remember.
Oh.
Like, how did we do? You tell me.
Well, maybe it's become more mythical than it really was, but I think the way I remember Ken McKenzie Grant mentioning is that you and he were on a canoe, I guess, out in the middle of Lake Austin at the time, and it was you just started, I guess, brainstorming and came up with Shades of Green. But maybe we'll have to.
About right.
Okay,
that does sound about right. I couldn't remember if it was at we had a camp out at Enchanted Rock. I didn't know if we were in the river or Enchanted Rock. I think it was in the river. I think you're probably correct.
Well, maybe the Enchanted Rock one is an alternative fact that makes it a myth, huh?
Who knows? But I think the river sounds more, it rings a bell.
Yes.
More of a bell.
But well, good.
That title, the show's title is so, you guys are so reflective of it, and what you're doing is so reflective of it. I even forgot that we originally came up with it.
Yeah. Well, many people, many shades of green on their way to the deep green that you're writing about.
Yeah.
Right. And people, also I want people to really be selfish, like to think, gee, if I save this much money a month, if I put $100 or $300 or $500 a month in my pocket, my whole world starts to look different. Suddenly, it's not unfeasible that I could start that micro business. Mm-hmm. It's not unfeasible that I could start looking around for a place that is in a little bit more walkable area. It's not unfeasible that I have a little bit more leverage over my boss and not feel threatened, you know, and feel like I have to work X number of hours a week. I could maybe have a little bargaining power and say, no, I want to work 30 hours a week. And yeah. Then I have more time for my family and my projects and civic activity.
Yeah. You know? Well, I like that analogy. Deep green can turn into saving green. Money.
Yeah.
People like that part of
so
it.
True.
Well,
that's
I also have this image, Jenny, of you doing these like tent revivals and bringing these sinners in to say, it's okay. It's okay. You can be
like
green here, but not green there. And
make people put their hands through.
Yeah.
Well, oh my gosh.
Jenny, it sounds like so much fun. And I imagine you had a lot of fun writing and researching for the book. And tell us again, it's Deep Green. Is the name of the
Deep
book?
Deep Green. That's correct. And there's a Facebook page, Deep Green Book by Jenny Nazak.
And Jenny, can you spell your name for us? Because I know that's your website as well.
Sure. Sure. JennyNaz as in zebra, AK.
All right.
JennyNazak.com. Yeah, my website. And like I said, my baby Sprout blog. It's not fleshed out yet, but it's actually a good time to start catching my blog, because it'll start fleshing out, even though it's just a baby now.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jenny, and filling us in on the bank. Great to hear your voice as well. Yeah.
Likewise. Like, it's a real pleasure, and I admire what you all are doing, and I have to go listen to some of the back recordings, especially
right.
about So Next.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. That's Jenny Nazak, former host of Shades of Green 2007 and on, and 2018 author of Deep Green. Minimize your footprint, maximize your time, wealth, and happiness.